Guru Nation, welcome to episode 795 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. In this episode, I interview Darshan Kulkarni, who's an attorney and a pharmacist. We do our monthly version of Fraud Pod, which is like an unofficial podcast we have within our own podcasts about fraud in clinical research. And today we get into an audience member's question about unblinded pharmacists at a site and some potential fraud going on. And then we delve into other areas of fraud, particularly what sites can do to mitigate this potential risk. So hopefully you find something interesting. Go follow Darshan. His LinkedIn is underneath the show notes. Quick shout out to our sponsors who are also underneath the show notes, Inato. Inato is a place where you can get studies for your site if you already have therapeutic area expertise. The good thing about Inato is that it is free. The next best thing about Inato is that they are constantly getting more studies, so you can find more of a diversity of trials on there. And I've been using Inato almost a year now, and I've already noticed increasing studies, increasing therapeutic areas, and it's helped my site as well. Now that I'm having more principal investigators at Yuma Clinical Trials. So check it out. Link in the show note. Absolutely free. Cost sites nothing. Also, thank you to Creo. I'm on Creo every day, managing the site operations, managing the recruitment, the auto texting, the e-consent, the CTMS. Increasingly, me in particular, I've been using the CTMS on a daily basis, just to track what's going on with the site. But I also get into some QA operations as I'm training QA staff on how to handle the operation. So everything's possible with Creo remotely, and you don't actually even need to be at the site to manage your site. So check out Creo. You only pay for what you use. So check it out in the show notes. With that being said, enjoy this episode. Darshan, you got to get back on X, man. You know, X, when I've been doing these live streams,
Is it working well?
X is doing the same amount of views as LinkedIn.
Kidding me. Oh, maybe
Yep.
I need to.
You need to
I
get
might need
back.
to
This
do.
is where we met
Yeah.
originally, and I feel like you have to come back.
I feel like I need to because I feel like there was a buzz downward trend with X, and then Facebook tried to do it, and now I feel like Facebook's Threads is not really doing much, and now we're
Oh,
back to like
not
X.
doing much is like a very generous. I mean, yeah, that's dead. No one's using Threads.
All I know is it keeps making Instagram just more painful. Like, please join
Yes.
Threads. I don't really want to.
Yeah, we're okay. We don't need more Threads. We're on Instagram to look at pictures, to look
Exactly.
at people's magazine versions of themselves. And we're on LinkedIn for business, and we're on X for everything, really. Like, mess
Really?
around. Research, yeah, X is like, and I use the AI, so this topic's a little bit about AI, but I pay
Yeah.
the premium Twitter or X, so
You like,
I
is
get
it's called Grokster,
Grok,
right? Grok. So,
Grokster, same thing, but
remind me of Napster, but sure.
Grok's pretty cool. Grok has
Really?
the funny mode by default,
Oh,
but
okay.
you could switch it to regular mode. So I found it's I found it's maybe for me better than ChatGPT because it, in a way, it's smarter. Like, it knows how to continue from the previous prompt better, like
Interesting.
more seamless. And then the more people use X, the more data it actually gets like from there. Like, so in the future, the like AI is a commodity, right? Like, it's a race downhill. It's a deflationary force. All that stuff eventually is going to be free. I mean, it's already free for users. Like, the value will be the user-generated content, the human-generated content, I should say, that's proprietary,
But
right?
how much human? Oh, we. This is exactly what we got to talk about, right?
Yeah, that's why we're doing Fraud Pod. I mean, Fraud Pod's good. Do you want to explain what Fraud Pod actually is?
Sure. So the way this started was Dan and I have been doing this podcast. Like, we've been doing our own podcast since like 09 or 08 or something,
Jeez,
and we always sort of got together and talked and stuff like that. And the last couple of years, I was like, oh, Dan, we should talk about this case that came up. He's like, sure, let's talk about it. And people were really interested in that case. And we were like, okay, and what should we call it? And people really went for Fraud Pod. Like, that was a name like people really latched onto. And Dan and I were like, oh, we should just call it Fraud Pod. Originally, we thought we'd do our own podcast on it called Fraud Pod. We might still do that. But the idea is that right now, both of us are still doing our thing and using a hashtag Fraud Pod. And that's connecting us anyways. Mm-hmm. But,
you know, I do another one, Guru Nation After Dark, or we go live like at midnight. That does surprisingly
well. Midnight whose time, though?
Midnight someone's time. I mean, it's usually
4 p.m.
9 p.m. Pacific, and
okay,
it ends up being midnight on the East Coast. And
there you go.
It's that one does surprisingly well, man. All the job seekers are out there, you know.
Yeah. And what do you think of the job seeker? Like, right now, I feel like everyone's looking for a job.
Everyone not at a site is looking for a job.
It's funny. I was actually just, I have a connection who's actually looking to hire someone as a coordinator for his site. Mm-hmm. And I actually put it on LinkedIn yesterday saying, if anyone's looking for a job in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, reach out to me.
Love that area.
Have you been?
Dallas. Oh, yeah.
Okay. But one of the things we were, so that's where Fraud Pod came from. Mm-hmm. But while it started off with being about cases that have already happened, one of the things we also talk about is things that might happen. That's where AI comes in. Everyone and his brother and his sister and his mother are all talking about AI. The question is, how much is hype?
What's okay, let's get to AI. But first, I just remembered. I got a text yesterday. It's for Darshan.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Hey, Dan, sorry to message you so late. I came across your YouTube. I have a very specific case going on, and I feel like you'd have more knowledge on what steps I need to take since you have a lot of knowledge about research. So,
there you go. There's a man.
I'm not the person for this, but I've been saving it. I was made aware by former coworkers, so this is a person that used to work at a site, that my former boss / lead CRC is using my name to sign off on a specific study. I didn't think it would be this hard to actually report and take legal action against them. A lot of people have no clue about research. I spoke to several other people. They told me to contact the sponsor, but the number I had was a patient number. Like, they don't have anything anymore. They're not at the site. I'm now trying to contact the FDA that oversees clinical trials to make them aware of this. I'm a former research assistant and was formerly an unblinded pharmacist on two of their studies in 2018 and 2019. I haven't been employed by them since 2019. I don't know the sponsor. My former coworkers are afraid to release more details about like such a sponsor and protocol number. I told her, do you remember the IRB? They said no. I don't have any access to anything, but let's just say I'm not surprised given the character of these coordinators over there. I made a specific complaint with the FDA-regulated clinical trial, some biologic studies, like FDA.hhs.gov, Division of Communication and Consumer Affairs.
You'd have to look into that little bit more. So a few things pop up in mind, right? So first of all, I think people talk and then some people are right, some people are wrong. So again, just to be clear, we're not giving legal advice. We don't know the details of the specific situation.
Flashing on the screen.
Right. But the big thing is we don't know enough details. I wonder if they're actually doing it. You might not be surprised, but for someone who hasn't worked there in at this point 5 years, if I was auditing the facility, I'd go, I want to talk to this person, find out more. And the fact that that hasn't popped up in 5 years says something. So I wonder if it's actually accurate is the first thing I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Let's assume it's accurate now. Let's assume that that's the scenario. Then the question becomes, who are you reporting? Are you reporting the coordinator? Are you reporting the IT people? Are you reporting the owner? So the coordinator apparently is the one using his pharmacist's name.
Right. The boss. She did say boss. So
that's what, but I don't know how the reporting structure worked.
Right. It's probably the lead CRC that is in charge of
could have been.
Yeah.
unusual because pharmacists don't usually report to CRCs, but it's possible.
Unblinded ones do, though, at smaller sites. And they she mentioned the site, but I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, fair enough. That's a different conversation.
But the
point being, in that situation, the next question, pharmacists don't usually work at smaller sites, which is why this is an unusual situation. But there's more to the story.
So unblinded pharmacist could be anyone. I've been an unblinded pharmacist. It's just someone who can't do anything else with that study. They're just mixing the drug because by actually seeing it, you can tell if it's the drug or placebo.
So then are they the pharmacist? So you've got to be careful of the word pharmacist.
Right.
It's a licensed term. Pharmacist
by sponsors. Like your site needs an unblinded pharmacist, but it doesn't actually mean like a certified pharmacist.
Okay, a licensed pharmacist.
Right.
So again, number one, I would be very careful. Are they qualified to do that? Because when you're talking about a smaller site,
yeah,
you're dispensing. I wouldn't necessarily use the term pharmacist.
Right.
I would be very worried about something like that because it has legal meaning.
Yeah, sponsors are dumb in that regard.
Yeah. It might also go to the fact that your delegation log should probably refer to them as a pharmacist is the other part of it, right?
Yeah.
You could call them, you couldn't call them a nurse. You might want to come up with a different term.
Well, like it's a commonly used phrase for sites with unblinded components. Where
I mean, I've been an unblinded pharmacist, right? So I've worked.
You are a pharmacist.
No, I am a pharmacist.
So we just had a study, my site, where the sponsor said, "Hey, you need an unblinded pharmacist. This is anyone that the PI delegates, doesn't have to be a pharmacist, to do nothing but the IP for that study."
Sure.
And we call them a unblinded pharmacist. So the PI chose a medical assistant to do this.
So number one, I wouldn't call them a pharmacist. I'd probably call them a dispenser or something like that. Number two, because it has legal meaning.
Yeah.
And the next question becomes, so let's assume that this person is, and have very specific rules around it, because mm-hmm. I've actually gone and audited pharmacies that were engaged in blinding and unblinding studies on unblinded pharmacists and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I've even been an unblinded pharmacist, my own individual capacity with a license. And there are rules and rules and rules on how to do it right. I spent like 3 days on site. Yeah.
This is actually a good topic. So let's say that you are a site like I am.
Yeah.
That gets a study and the sponsor uses this term. And you're like, all right, we do have one. But do we just change it the name? Or
sure.
I mean,
why not?
Sponsor's referring to them the whole study duration and emails and everything as unblinded pharmacists.
I would clarify that for legal reasons we can't call them an unblinded pharmacist.
Okay.
But this person is in charge of dispensing the product.
Okay.
So
unblinded IP
dispenser. Yeah, exactly.
Admin or something.
Correct. There you go. Something like that really gives you a little bit more wiggle room. But in either scenario, you've got to make sure that they have policies, procedures, everything else in place, because you'd be surprised how many things can go wrong. I'll give you an example. Is the medication supposed to be refrigerated? Right. If it is, how do you make sure that the refrigeration is happening at the right time? Is the medication stored in a secure area? How do you know, for example, that it's not being stored in the same fridge as like your food, which more often than not, it is. I've gone to so many sites. And your food and your medication stored next to each other, that's cross-contamination. You put the product in one location, you check the temperature at another. Well, does that temperature really reflect the temperature that your product is experiencing? So if you have an AC blowing, and I've seen this happen, the AC blows directly onto the medication, but the temperature is there.
Right.
Well, how do you trust it? How often are you checking your temperature logs? You're talking about a controlled substance. In those situations, how are you controlling access? You often need to be behind two levels of secured access. Mm-hmm. Blah, 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 blah.
There's a lot with IP that I think...
It's one of the top five findings from the FDA.
Really?
Yeah.
To me, we're in the desert. You know, that was a good song, intro song. But in the summer, obviously, it gets really hot. And it's not uncommon for like refrigerated IP to go through temperature excursions.
Exactly right.
And
how do you know it's not been denatured in any way?
Right. So we have these temp sticks, they're called, I wish we were sponsored by them. Maybe one day. It's continuous. You know, you can do every 15 minutes, you can get a temperature.
But here's my question. Number one. So there are different temp sticks. I've actually seen the temp sticks, right? So that's not a big issue. Mm-hmm. But the problem you have is, number one, who does it notify? Number two, what do they do in reference to the temp stick? Number three, how do you know if the temp stick was validated? Just because you have a temp stick doesn't mean the temp stick is validated.
What was number two?
I don't know what I said. So number how one often is, do you get notified? I think it was the other
we
one.
We get notified as soon as you can set it up whenever there's an excursion.
An excursion, correct. You set up the temperature variation you'll allow
for. Yeah, the site director and then all the CRCs.
But that means that you're only getting notified during an excursion. Correct. Not. So you can also set it up to send you a log or to send you a notification daily on the temperature as well.
You get a log anytime you want.
Correct. But the question then becomes, how do you trust? How do you trust the temp stick? Like, how do you know that it's doing
it? Yearly calibrated.
And that's the point.
It's in our SOP.
There you go. So you've got to be calibrating it the whole time. And you've got to be testing the calibration on a routine basis.
Yearly. Yeah. For us, it's yearly.
I'm not saying it is or it isn't, but make sure that that's adequate for what you're doing. It may be adequate.
Right.
But those are the things, and I know a lot of people don't. I know large hospitals that don't do that. They're surprised that that's something they should be doing.
I mean, research usually takes stricter precautions on these things than standard of care facilities.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, I've worked in multiple standard of care facilities. Most people don't even know that that's something they should be doing. They just have a log in there and they'll get a notification every so often.
Most, most doctor's offices that don't do research, they keep their samples in like a janitor closet. Next to like Lysol, Fabuloso.
Exactly.
So cross-contamination right there, not to mention a little odd to keep medicine next to like Fabuloso. But
I don't know what Fabuloso is.
Because you have a maid and all that. This is like
people not have a maid. That
clean their own homes, Darshan. You know, this is a thing where like you have to mop.
It's called Lysol. I don't know what a Fabuloso is.
It's like a cleaning solution for the mop. You know, you dilute it with water and then you mop.
Yeah, see, I have wood floors. I'm not mopping anything on these wood floors.
I used to have. That was my old house. Yeah. Shout out to the Latinos in Clinical Research. Everyone knows what's Fabuloso.
Cultural differences, Dan.
I don't even
This is know a California thing.
I don't even know what the American equivalent actually is. Wow.
Jeez. Like Dan suddenly breaks out into like hardcore Spanish right now going, "It's Fabuloso. We all know what it is. I don't know why you don't know this."
Working on it. And I think in a year I can do a pod in Spanish, entire pod.
Really?
I did like a 7-minute interview in Spanish, but the guest was doing less of the talking.
Oh yeah, as long as you didn't ask questions about like sports, I'm sure you were okay. Because last time you did that to me, I did this smile and nod.
Well, you're a Philadelphia guy, so you're expected to know Allen Iverson.
That's the only guy I knew.
Okay, well he's the only one you really. Well, now they have these. Yeah, he's still the only guy worthy of knowing from Philly.
How dare you? How dare you? How about the Kelseys?
No. They have a good podcast.
They do. They do have a good podcast.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. I know very, very little. So I want to clarify for anyone who knows anything about football, I admit I know very little. Right. Having said that, one of the Kelce brothers is dating Taylor Swift, which means that he matters. And the other one just retired, so he did matter. And they were both in the Super Bowl, the only two brothers to do it. So you know what? You got to give it to them.
Of course. And they're super intelligent. Want to extend their brand beyond football and do the podcast. Yeah. I mean,
that's a weird place to go, don't you think? I mean, like you and I do it as small business owners. I feel like if you are a football player, I feel like you have huge places. Like you should be on like NBC growing your brand. No?
Those are losing. No one watches that anymore, first of all.
You think?
Yeah, who watches?
You think podcasts are the new TV?
Yeah. What do you watch mostly, listen to? I mean, you're not an outlier in this.
I actually watch TV mostly. I have like 9 different streaming channels.
Oh, okay. Like you watch actual TV?
Yeah.
Huh.
You don't?
No.
So interesting.
I mean, we have YouTube TV, but I rarely watch it.
I don't watch YouTube TV. I just have YouTube. I have the paid version of YouTube.
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's one of my favorites. And yeah, no. I mean, podcast, this is what people consume.
I'm curious from the audience, for those people who are listening, do you guys actually watch TV, or are you guys watching like podcasts?
Well, we get, what is it called? Sample bias, because everyone's like watching a live stream on X and LinkedIn.
But I don't know if it's sample bias, because you could be watching both. And let's be honest, Dan Safara is must-watch TV.
Come on. Only with Darshan. So anyways, back to this person before we move on to AI.
Right.
What can they do? Like, I also think it's a little weird. Like, but here's from a practical site owner.
We have a comment.
Oh yeah,
Ashley
Margo says TV at night, podcast during the day.
Interesting.
I mean, I'll watch things on my TV, but it's not TV.
Oh no, I'm watching TV on my TV. I have a big screen like TV downstairs, like a projector that I love watching things on. I don't go to the movies anymore. 2 years ago, or at least pre-COVID, I would watch a movie every single night in the theater because I had one of those the passes that they had for $30. Oh, watch as so I used to do that, and I'd have all the subscription channels. I'd watch everything on all of them.
Wow.
But now I think I don't need to go to the main screen, so I have one downstairs and I enjoy it. But podcast throughout the day.
Podcast throughout the day. So let me break down so we can move to AI.
Yeah.
This person. Okay, so it is a small site, because I know the site. I don't know the site, but I actually looked it up yesterday, and they're basically like Yuma Clinical Trials. So they probably have like a long-term study that started in like 18 or 19, like this.
Sure.
That's going on. It's in maintenance mode right now.
Yeah.
5 years later.
Yeah.
They didn't have the staff when this person left. Here's what I think is happening. When this person left, probably on bad terms,
it
sounds like there's more here than just don't want my name being used.
Right.
The lead CRC was like, it doesn't make sense to put someone else on it. I'll just do it and sign off as them. You know? And who cares? You know, nobody cares. Like, the unblinded pharmacist monitor probably does it remote now, and it's just send us the logs and all that stuff. So that's probably, I would think, what's going on, because it's very easy to do this.
Right. So a couple of different responses. So number one, think of our friend Sami Anwar.
That dude got so, by the way, he was a LinkedIn connection.
Was he really?
Yeah. People thought I was like involved with him somehow. They're like, well, I was like, no, I don't even know who that is. Oh, you're connected with him on LinkedIn. Okay, well,
I'm connected to a lot of people on LinkedIn.
Let me block him now. Yeah. I don't know 90% of the people that are my
connected. Oh yeah. Easy. So let's address that question first of all, right? So number one, I think that's fraudulent. If they are, let's assume all the facts are true the way they're sort of presented, and as you're presenting them.
Yeah.
I would say number one, you'd have to find exactly who at the FDA's office you'd report to. I don't think it's just consumer affairs. There are probably better places to go. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Number two, depending on how the billing's done, OIG might be a really good place to report to. Number three,
what's OIG office of?
Office Inspector General, sorry. Okay. Office Inspector General. You can also go to the DOJ and point out that this is happening, which is clinical trial fraud is one of their number one areas of that they're trying to address right now. Department of Justice. Sorry, I keep throwing these out because these are words I use all the time, but I appreciate you clarifying, Dan.
Yes.
So DOJ is looking at these issues right now. It's one of four top areas they've been focusing on since 2021. And you're seeing a bunch of court cases come out where they're doing settling and going after people in clinical research.
Yeah.
So that's continuing. I think the sponsor may want to know, but the question is, who would the sponsor? But I think that there's a certain number. There are two different things that are going on, right? So first is, should they tell people? And the second thing is, does it matter? So from a should they tell people, from patient safety, they being this pharmacist, for lack of a better term.
Oh, the former employee.
The former employee. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
So the former employee, should they tell people from a patient safety standpoint, from a fraud standpoint, that all makes sense. And that's great. But will something come back and bite them? I would say on the list of things, it's a lower risk because number one, they don't have confirmation. Number two, they have nothing to do with it. Number three, like if they keep a paper trail of you trying to notify people saying, hey, stop using my name if you're using it. So that way you're going and you're very clear that I heard about this. I want this stuff to stop. And then the liability is minimized because what else can you do?
So she should do a certified letter with a return.
Or an email. I mean, you can do certified letter and all that stuff, but you're just trying to keep a paper trail going.
Okay.
I heard this. I don't know if it's true. Yeah. If it is true, I want you to know, don't do it.
So that covers her.
I mean, to the extent it can be covered. I don't know. I don't know if I ever told you this. I used to clerk for a federal court judge. And during that time, we'd get these petitions, these complaints. And one of the complaints was from a dude, from a homeless guy who was suing the president of the United States, Batman, Superman, and like someone else because he wasn't allowed to use like a Wells Fargo bathroom. So the point is anyone can sue for anything. Like just because they can sue, the likelihood of you succeeding is not super high. It's what's called pro se, which means that I'm filing on behalf of myself. I don't have a lawyer.
No chance. Okay. Sure.
Well, I don't know. I feel like Batman could have really like responded to this. So
so a judge wasted their time? Like
the clerks did. I mean, we were the clerks.
Okay. All right.
But the thing is that those things are easy to throw out, right? Because you can throw out, like, there's no way for Batman and Superman to answer. Mm-hmm. President of the United States, like, there have been some cases where, it's going back 15 years, but you, even though you know this is idiotic, you can't just throw the case out. Because you have to go with the worst case scenario. What if everything they're saying is true? Mm-hmm. There are two different big steps in litigation. There's the motion to dismiss, and there's the motion for summary judgment before the actual trial itself. The motion to dismiss is like super early on, and it's when someone files a complaint, the other side can file a motion to dismiss going, we're doing like a totally different conversation right now, but for those people who are interested.
We'll get back to AI, yeah.
Yeah. In the motion to dismiss stage, what's really, and I'm not a litigator, just to be clear, but this is what I remember from when we were doing this in federal court. The motion dismisses, even if everything you said is true, every single thing you said is true, I still can't give you the relief you wanted because either you're statutorily barred. So let's say you're coming in 30 years after the fact for a contract dispute. Well, you're statutorily barred. Those contract disputes can only be brought in that specific instance for like 2 years after the situation. You've come back too late. So even if they really did screw you over, you can't bring it in right now. You are suing Batman, who's not an entity that can be sued. Those types of things get statutorily barred, can be thrown out of motion to dismiss.
I see.
Now, if there's a question where, there's just a, that is really more of a, there's no case to be made. Then there's the motion to dismiss stage. Sorry, the motion for summary judgment stage. And that's generally when all the facts are in your favor. Even if the facts are exactly what you say they are, no reasonable jury would go in your direction. And again, going back, I'm sure the standards have changed and the like. But and I may be misremembering things, but generally speaking, that's the motion for summary judgment. So you've done the depositions, you've spoken to people, you've got all the information. There is no reasonable jury that would still vote in your favor. So we're not going to take it to trial. We're going to settle this. So the judge will throw out different elements from your complaint going, this is not going to work. This is not going to work. Because a lot of when you're filing a complaint, you will have like two charges that are likely to succeed, two that you know are bullshit charges, and like one that is, you know what, I don't even know why I'm throwing it in here, but it's going to be something I negotiate with. Okay. So that's the thought process often, complaints.
Okay. So as far as this person is concerned,
going back, yes,
like going they back, just contact DOJ and that's it, or and send an email, cover your ass,
send an email to the person going, hey, I don't know if this is happening. If it is, I want you guys to stop, because I don't work for you. I haven't worked for you in forever.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna say who it came from, any of that stuff, because you don't want to be involved in like blaming the wrong people.
Yeah.
Because you don't want like defamatory claims being made against you. You're just saying, I heard, this is what I heard, I want you to stop it. End of the story.
Sometimes these things are exaggerated, right? Like
exactly.
They often get exaggerated. There's like emotional response to something else that they're not right. telling us.
Yeah.
Like maybe they just didn't take them off the DOA log.
Correct. And that might be as simple as
they're signing off on her.
Right. Like, maybe they're just using pre-printed logs that have existed forever. There's not much happening.
Yeah.
Your name's still on there, but you've been taken off. And that's possible as well, right?
Yeah. And like if I were the site owner, I wouldn't. It doesn't cost much to add an unblinded pharmacist. I mean, you usually right. just add, even though you don't like calling it that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Just add like an MA at the site.
Right.
And then you can even help them, unofficially help them do the logs. I mean, you don't need to go out of your way to commit fraud. And I think right. any site that does that is
pretty seems scary. Unnecessary.
Yeah. It's
you just delegate it to someone else. Like, why would you bother?
But you never know. This is FraudPod, and we got a lot of nuggets out of that from you. Like,
yeah, honestly. The last time we did that was we did a bunch of them. We should probably start doing individual cases the next time we do one of these.
Sure. But you want to talk about AI, because that's
in everyone's minds, right? So so I presented at a conference for DIA probably about 15 days ago.
You still got it, DIA and all?
So that? I kind of stopped for a while in the middle.
Yeah.
DIA actually helped set up the
you need to come to save our sites, man. And then next year.
That was the only one, because I actually helped set that one up. So I had to do that. I haven't done any others. I usually tend to do them in Philly because it saves my travel costs. But outside that, SOS is on my it might become my only exception next year.
Okay. Okay.
Me too.
We're in the same camp.
Right. Well, I first of all, I heard great things about SOS, first of all. Number two, my friends are already there. You guys are there. Brad's there. Like, you know, it's kind of great to see friends that I've known. So there are good reasons to go. The bad reasons is, cash flow and all those things that any small business owner goes through.
Yeah.
Speaking of, how has business been for you guys as sites?
As sites, really good.
Really? Okay.
Well, this is your. It's going to be year three of the site at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like we're beyond profitable. We've been profitable for the last year, I would say.
Nice.
Getting new site selection visits. Have five specialists, so that's helpful, that are diverse, like across different therapeutic areas.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not nowhere near the ceiling of what we can do. Some of the specialists I don't even have any studies for right now because they're new. So it's just, I'm going to need more staff soon and building out the systems and revising the SOPs, especially after our last fraud pod. Me and Katie revised the SOP. Actually, I have to sign off on them today. Thank you for reminding me.
There you go.
Because a lot of our SOP were outdated and we technically weren't following every aspect of it because it was ancient. So we revised it. So now,
and that's the point. I think you're supposed to keep going back and auditing yourself.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with finding mistakes. This is the big thing I would say to people. Mm-hmm. Everyone thinks that finding mistakes is a bad thing. The idea is that you do find mistakes. It tells you that your system is working.
Right.
Not finding them is the problem.
Right.
You should be in a continuous state of improvement. Now,
right.
If you're finding fraud, that has its own issues. But
oh, yeah.
But we haven't done that. Right. But you know what? We want to do this, but we're doing this. It's time to reconcile. We want to do this, but we're doing this. Time to reconcile. That's what your quality system should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally speaking, the person in charge of quality shouldn't be the person doing the work, because you want someone who's unbiased.
Right. We have QA, like I said in the last fraud pod. I mean, that one actually helped me improve a lot of aspects of our business. So we have the QA people now. They're sending formal reports. every week. We actually found something on there that we could fix before the monitor comes, and thankfully we didn't. We were not out of compliance, but we might have been if they didn't bring this to our attention.
So here's a question.
Thank you for that fraud pod, by the way.
Of course. That's why we do these, right? To help not just Dan, but to help everyone else who's listening.
By the way, X get a nugget. Is blowing up. X, we have 69 live viewers right now. So thank you, X.
Wow. I appreciate that. Wow. Like, you know LinkedIn, what? I'm going to have to move.
LinkedIn's only like, I don't know, like 12?
Okay, I'm going to try to switch.
I think the LinkedIn algorithm's like, doesn't favor the lives anymore like they used to.
Yeah, I'm going to play with their algorithm. Switch.
Yeah, I need you back on X. A lot of this is just my argument to get you back on X. how's business for you, though?
So, last year was decent, but I could see things slowing down. So I had like 4 clients who were on retainer. They all got bought out, which is great for them.
Like,
I'm really happy for them.
Small pharma or what were
they? Let's see. One was a hospital. One was a medical device company. One was a law firm who was hiring me.
Wow.
One was a tech company.
Wow.
So
congrats
across the board. But the one of them got bought out. The other ones, we moved away from retainer model. And then three of them got bought out. One moved to a retainer model. And the idea was, now we're back into starting up from scratch, which is always good. It's always good, but it's always terrifying. Because you go, am I doing this right? Luckily, things are still flowing. Things are doing well. They're going to pick back up. But was it as good as last year, the year before that? Oh, my God, no. Those were years were crazy for me. It was awesome.
Pandemic years?
Yeah, the pandemic years. So it's a growth phase again, readjusting, trying to get into new spaces. I'm actually looking at, I think you and I have discussed, the tech that I'm trying to bring as well. So that should be interesting.
Yeah. I forgot about that, actually.
Yeah. And sort of connecting. I'm trying to dig in deeper into some of the podcasting stuff we're doing to see if, with the use of AI, I realized that I had about 50, 60, 70 topics that I'd never get to because there's no means to do it. And I don't have the time to write it all out. So AI helps me write out a first draft and I edit it and review it and update and modify it and blah, blah, blah. And that's been a great way to put out content and to put out sort of things that I've been meaning to talk about. For example, this might become a whole conversation about the how should a pharmacist be referred to if you're not a pharmacist in clinical research. I've been thinking about doing maybe like a training system for like how do you negotiate a clinical trial agreement? Because I feel like a lot of people reach out and ask those questions. And just having that ready for people, I'd be curious to see if people are interested in something like that. But simplify that. So is there a difference between, say, doing a live in-person training versus having these pre-recorded augmented with additional conversations? Why the publication one matters? What are some variations of it? Why you should do it in one way versus another? And what are the considerations? And sort of take each paragraph and sort of negotiate and talk about it. So we'll see how that plays out.
Okay.
But it's kind of been exciting and interesting. So
do you think the business will like for life science in general, because it's hard for people right now, not at the site level, like mm-hmm. I'm talking CRO and sponsor level.
Yeah.
I think it's hard to find a job in those type of organizations today.
Right now there've been a bunch of layoffs. So
at CRO and pharma.
Yeah, CRO and pharma level. I think I was talking to someone yesterday and they said something like they've been tracking 160 companies doing layoffs.
Yeah.
In the area. So I was like, that is interesting. So I think the term for it right now is right sizing, where they're going be overhired.
Right sizing. Well, the people getting laid off, it's not right. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. The difference between people versus profits, and that's what's happening, right? So, but sometimes, again, as a business owner, and you know this as a small business owner, for the business to survive, for you to be able to feed your kids. Sometimes you just have to make the really hard decision.
Yeah, I've had to make layoffs before. I've had to fire people. Right now, we're overstaffed on purpose, and but we can afford it. Like, we're still growing. So we're in a different stage as a startup research site. I think the sites are still busy for the most
part. So here's another thing to think about, and I've been talking to some other one of my site clients about this right now. They're one of the smaller sites. One of the, I feel like there's an inflection point that sites don't know about. So we have, I have a client who is looking to possibly sell. And what's interesting is that he's in really, he's in a really good spot, but the entire business depends on him. And if you are ever going to be in a situation where you're going to sell, the company that's going to try to buy you wants to know what happens when you leave. Because if the entire business on, depends on you.
Oh, man. I'm writing, I've been told to make a video, and it's on my list. Top 10 books I've read and recommend for site owners.
Right.
And one of them, after this one, I mean, I'll shamelessly promo the hell out of this. This is number one. This is number one through 10, all right, in my humble opinion.
What's number 11?
Probably something religious.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. I didn't see you as a religious guy. Good to know.
Philosophically religious, spiritual.
Okay. Okay. I didn't see you as a Deepak Chopra guy either.
There's one called, there's one I'm listening to. This won't make the list though, but top 10. There's one I'm listening to called Radical Acceptance.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty good, but it's the opposite of getting you pumped up in the morning. So, you know, I don't
listen to it
that often. Okay, check it out. What I was going to say, the related to what you said. Number two on that list, it really should be number one, but I'm cheating with my book. The E-Myth, right? The E-Myth.
Never heard of that.
It's, you probably don't need it, but it's all about building systems. It was written like in the 90s. He writes about how McDonald's is... Like, if you own a McDonald's, you're not flipping the burgers and ordering the food. And, you know, you should be just working on your business, not in your business. And I read this book in 05 when I started my site. Thank God I did, because I understood from early on that your business should operate independently of yourself. And if you can't, this is the E-Myth Revisited. This is the one I have. I highly recommend this for any site owner, you, including your client or whomever it is that you're talking to.
And I think that's the point I was making to him. I think you need to, you, when you go away, and I'm going to take this off the screen.
Okay. Highly recommend. Stay tuned for my video soon on top 10 books. I'm still figuring out the list.
Okay. Can you take this off the screen?
Oh yeah. There you go. The E-Myth. Highly recommend.
I think the point I was making, and it's the same point you're making, which is you've got to develop systems. Early on in your growth stage, you have to figure out all the stuff that's missing, and you've got to figure out what works, what doesn't work, all that good stuff. But then eventually you got to move away from yourself. How do you make it not about you? Especially because when you are selling and you're ready to sell, it's often because of two things. Number one, you want the money, or you don't want the headaches. If you want the money, you are going to have to actually go, I want the money up front. Otherwise, they're going to say, you know what? I'm not going to pay you as much up front because I want to see that the systems work.
Right.
And what you deal with at that point is this idea of, well, I need to put systems in. Alternatively, if you don't want the headaches, the only way to take the headaches off your plate is by having systems. Yeah, exactly. I was like, I can't repeat that.
No, exactly right. And a lot of site owners are operating like Subway sandwich store owners, where the owner's making the sandwiches and doesn't want to hire help and mops the floors. We're using Fabuloso, probably.
Dude, you need to get sponsored by Fabuloso.
Oh, man, it would be a dream come true. More so for my wife, but yeah, a dream come true.
Is it more of a dream for your wife if you're the one using the Fabuloso?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's like a very idealistic dream of hers. I'll do it every now and then, though.
Yeah.
So yeah, the e-myth, build systems, guys. If you want to sell, if you don't want to ever sell your site,
still build systems.
I mean, still build systems, but like if you actually enjoy working in your site and it doesn't depend on you, your systems need to be less stringent, I think.
My experience working with site owners is that those who don't have systems are always putting out fires.
Because
people don't know what they're supposed to do because they come to you for every question. If you have a system in place, you go, this is what you do in this scenario. Right. You've written it down, follow the rules. And you don't have to come to me with every question.
You can empower your staff. Like, we have a pre-screening system. I do it initially. Then they learn the pattern.
Yep.
Now they're doing it. Shout out to Gracia. She 11 p.m. at night, she's texting a patient on our app. Shout out to Patient Ace Recruitment. It scheduled him for today.
Yeah.
So that's because I empowered her and everyone else. Hey, if you see a lead come through, this is what you do.
So let me tell you what your next phase looks like.
Okay.
Your next phase, and again, you may have already be past this, but a lot of site sponsors, any small business, your first stage is getting things off your plate. The second stage, as you grow into probably around 25, 10, 15, 20, 25 people, is the people you're empowering don't want to be empowered. They'd rather talk to you and still get the question. You're like, I gave you the system.
No, follow it. And they won't last long, or they'll be demoted to like another role.
So you can say that, but you're going to find this anyways, because I know people who've been doing this. I know companies that had 200 people that have this problem.
Oh, man. I've never managed the company bigger, more than like 15 staff.
I know a company that's 10 people large has this problem. I know a company that's 250 people large has this problem. The CEO in both cases, they're excellent CEOs. But that's why everyone goes, I don't want to figure this out.
I had this problem with two people once. Yeah. And it's like that person needs to go.
Yeah.
You know, you do everything you can. And hey, you're not wanting to take the initiative. Maybe there's something going on. Like,
it's not that they don't want to take initiative. You've always been the one to solve the problem. You're the only one who has the full picture.
Right.
And that's why they keep coming to you. But
right,
it goes back to systems. But Dan, we are getting close to where we need to end. We never got
maybe
to AI.
Maybe a cliffhanger for AI.
Yeah.
For the next one. Unless we get more good questions that are on the fraudulent angle.
And we'll always talk about that as well, right?
We love fraud on this show.
Let's rephrase that. We don't like doing it. We like help solving it.
Correct. Yeah.
But
AI is getting into everything. I'll leave it that cliffhanger. There's a lot of startups using AI.
Talk about some of the bullshit of the startups as well.
Well, I think it's a race to the bottom, honestly. I think it's rapidly being commoditized.
I'm not sure I agree with the commodity part of it. I do think that there's going to be a value add, but I think it's going to become, for lack of a better term, and I think it's the same thing you're saying in a different way, but it will become a utility.
Yeah, that's the same thing as what I'm saying.
Yeah, which is why, but I think
there are two versions of utilities. Price point, not value, right? A utility is, the price is like the main variable. A value possibly is differentiating features.
I see a very clear difference between a Claude, a ChatGPT, and a Gemini.
Now.
Correct.
I think in 10 years you don't.
Did you hear about yesterday's news with NVIDIA?
No, but I love their CEO. He said that you guys need to have resiliency.
I really like him because number one, one of his recent statements, I really need to start going, but one of his recent statements was people think that being an entrepreneur is easy. It is to be successful. You have to go through some hard things. So if you want to be successful, I wish you go through some hard things because that's what makes you successful.
Yeah, that clip needs to be watched by everyone who's thinking about being a site.
Yeah. Yeah. But he came out yesterday and he said that here's a chip that is 1,000 times faster than what we have right now.
Wow.
And that's what we're bringing out. So
this was
AI right now is based on old technology, and they're about to just upgrade everyone.
Well, on that cliffhanger,
yeah.
Go follow Darshan. I want to talk to you for 2 minutes before you got to go.
Okay.
But go follow Darshan. His LinkedIn is underneath this video. And if you're listening in the show notes, if you're already on his channel, you need to stay there. It's a good place to be. Thank you very much, Darshan.
Thank you, guys.
And get on X, man.
I'm getting back on X.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.